Welcome to the D Word podcast. Good to have your company for some more dementia talk. The food we eat is our focus on this edition, as my guest is nutritional therapist Kate Taylor. Well, Kate, welcome to the D Word. Great to have you here on the show. You're a registered nutritional therapist. You also specialise in brain health and dementia. So you're right up our street, as it were. Before we start kind of getting into that, I mean, tell us a little bit about your background. How did you get involved in all this?
First of all, thank you very much for having me. It's a pleasure to be here, and I feel very humbled that you've had me on. So my background into nutrition was somewhat indirect. To tell you the complete truth, I was watching a documentary about the production of chocolate, right from cacao bean to bar. And I was then telling somebody about this just on in a phone call, and they said to me, "Oh, you've remembered a lot. Why don't you become a nutritionist? Ha ha ha." And I took them at their word. And so I retrained for 4 years in the core nutritional sort of course and subject matter. And then because I have direct familial experience with brain health, dementia, and Alzheimer's disease, I thought, well, what better to specialize in? This is not, it's no longer a hidden condition. We're becoming increasingly more aware of it. There is more recommendation, support, advice, and publicity around the disease. So I thought, well, I can play my part from a diet and lifestyle perspective.
Yeah, no, I think, am I right in saying that I came at all this from a background in public health? And during that time, there was loads of stuff about heart health and, to be honest with you, various other parts of the body, but very few people actually mentioned brain health. And I still think that's the case when you talk to people.
Yes, I would tend to agree. And although figures in the public eye in particular are becoming far more open with their diagnosis, this is helping somewhat lessen the stigma. However, there seems to be, even amongst the healthcare profession, there seems to be a slight disconnect that people don't really think of the brain as part of the body. They view it as a standalone situation, and they don't quite make the connections between, our gut health, our heart health, our chronic stress, our sleep, our diet and our lifestyle or our exercise, with the implications and its importance on our brain health. I think it's changing, but yes, I would actually tend to agree with you that it's not quite mainstream yet.
Hopefully with the influence of people like yourself, it will start to change. I mean, go back to the whole nutrition thing. You are what you eat. Everything is joined together as such.
Yes.
But I still feel as though, I think a lot of people feel that can be complicated by conflicting advice of eat this, don't eat that, and this is good. Oh, somebody else says it isn't. And it must be really difficult to kind of drive through that whole lot of advice, which comes at different directions in different forms.
I completely agree with you, and it is one of the challenges of the registered nutritional therapy profession. So, what I would say is that there is an awful lot of a sort of freely accessible information out there. So, before you are taking anything on board, check the credentials of the person that's giving these recommendations, and sometimes check some of the sponsors, because that can obviously skew the information that they then will portray. As far as nutrition is concerned, always look for a registered nutritionist, and obviously a dietitian has gone through, very formal NHS training, so that's also a good avenue to pursue. But the other thing with nutritional science, or I mean science in general, is that it's very dynamic. As more and more research is going into the impacts of food, exercise, sleep, stress, the impacts that that has on our body, it is changing as we're investing more time and effort and concentrating on how we can improve our systemic wellness. It is changing, and just as fast as the food industry is changing. So it has to be a little bit changeable and a little bit dynamic, but it will also depend on your personal health status. What is good for one person is not going to be good for another. And this is why, nutritionists really urge personalized, tailored programs, so that we can really support your brain health or your health generally, for what is optimal for your body.
And I think, you've hit nail on the head there. That's a really important part because when we go into, the world of dementia, the old saying is if you met one person with dementia, you've met one person with dementia. Because again, that's given the umbrella format and everybody thinks, well, symptoms are the same and whatever. And it's very much the case, as you say, with nutrition, that I think still probably the public view is there'll be all these eat more berries, eat more this, eat more that. But as you've just said, it depends on who you are as to what effect it's all going to have.
Yes, exactly. I couldn't have put it better myself. What I would say is because I'm a specialist in brain health and Alzheimer's dementia, there are a few core principles which a nutritionist would recommend. But then again, if we do have the odd person with, a slightly unusual symptom, then it is our job to tailor it according to that person's, optimal health status and aspirations. Certainly in the training that I've received, actually I'm RECODE 2.0 trained, and that's a program that is coming out of America. It's being more widely adopted, but it was an American doctor, Dr. Dale Bredesen, who first sort of promoted and categorized this. And just with my training from a nutritional perspective, there are 5.5 subcategories. So, it's my job to then identify where the primary vulnerabilities and drivers are, within the client in front of me. And then I can support them to, the best of my knowledge according to their, mediating influences on their cognitive function or if it's been diagnosed, cognitive decline, dementia, Alzheimer's.
Radio, the station that makes you feel good. UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
The Nationwide Building Society has teamed up with Dementia UK to offer free consultations with an Admiral nurse at their branches throughout the country. You can find out when they'll be in your area at www.dementiauk.org. Back to my guest now, nutritional therapist Kate Taylor. Another thing, I've kind of, a lot of people have mentioned Dr. Bredesen that have come on the show, do know a little bit about his approach. But one of the things that interests me also is that, a lot of this needs joining together, doesn't it, in terms of people that are dealing with dementia at various stages or whatever. And compliment you on your website, which I think is really informative and, would hope people will go and look out after they've listened to this. But there's stuff on there also that isn't strictly nutrition, but it's all linked because you talk about things like movement, sleep, continual learning, this kind of stuff. And do you feel it all needs jointing together a bit with, everybody realizing what you do and the whole picture just seems a bit fragmented at the moment?
So again, I could not agree with you more. And a collaborative, multi-professionally faceted approach would be absolutely ideal. There's been some research that's just been released, actually, that suggests there are, to the best of our knowledge, about 36 different factors which may be playing a part in health. And now, obviously, a nutritionist cannot be dealing with all of those factors. We are professionally and ethically prohibited from doing so. So our main focus will be, you know, your diet, your nutrients, et cetera, et cetera. However, it is also our job to refer to appropriate professionals. So if we can see that someone has got a mouthful of mercury fillings, which, you know, has only been phased out fairly recently, then it's my job as a nutritionist to say, you know, maybe you should go and talk to your dentist about this because it's a heavy metal in your mouth, you know, especially if you've got inflamed gums, you know, that it can all be linked. The same with exercise, you know, go and see a professional coach in whatever exercise you wish to pursue, or, you know, get a qualified personal trainer so that they can sculpt a program that's appropriate for your body. So as a nutritionist, you're absolutely right. And I'm extremely careful to stay within my boundaries of nutrition and diet and food, but it is part of my job to refer to appropriately qualified professionals when I get a sense that actually the client would really benefit from tailored help elsewhere. And a collaborative approach in a perfect world would just be, it would almost be a game changer, actually.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, you're looking out, as it were, at all these other areas. Does it happen the other way around to you? Do you get referrals from health professionals who, as part of the whole package, say, well, actually, you need to look at your nutrition?
So, good question. I think I have been fortunate in the connections that I have made. So, you know, I do have colleagues who are, for example, counselors or personal trainers, and even, you know, conventional medicine doctors who are beginning to sort of trust me, to learn more about what I do, to put, you know, acknowledge the role that diet has in your, you know, whole body health, not just brain health. As you say, brain health is slightly on the back burner when we come to, you know, whole systemic medicine. You know, people instantly know if there's something not quite right with their gut. But with brain health, it's slightly more sort of slow burning and insidious. And it's, you know, it's also frightening. So it's not the first thing to be acknowledged. But I would say that professionals outside of nutrition, they are gradually accepting the role. I mean, and the mantra, you know, diet and exercise for good health, that's not new. And it's just, I think I've hit it at just the right time because other professionals are indeed, you know, happy to collaborate and seeking out my views. So I'm actually quite reassured by the current health landscape.
Good. That's, you know, it's really good to hear. I mean, in terms of, you know, when we talk of dementia, obviously there is young onset dementia, but still the majority of cases are over 65. I think if you're over 85, there's a 30% chance, I think, those kind of statistics. So I think, you know, what you're doing is proof that it's never too late, I guess. That, you know, everybody thinks, oh, well, I can't really change now. But, you know, that's not the case.
Yes, I mean, I would argue it actually from both ends of the spectrum. Not only is it never too late, but it's also never too early to start. I understand that the youngest diagnosed person to have dementia, a diagnosis of dementia, was 19 years old. I mean, that's hugely traumatic for a person. Yes, it's never too early to start. And in a slightly alarming way, the age that is considered sort of ripe for dementia is as young as 40. So it's after 40 years old that the emphasis really starts to crank up on, you know, doing protective and preventative measures for your brain health and, you know, to reduce your dementia risk. But, you know, it is never too early to start. And then at the other end of the spectrum, we are, depending on as I mentioned, the subcategories earlier, depending on the subcategory of cognitive decline that you have been assessed or dementia, subcategory dementia you've been diagnosed with, once a diagnosis is really deeply entrenched, it is very difficult for nutrition alone to bring it back. So, I would not want to make any claims that nutrition will by any means eradicate it. It will not. But if you catch it in time, or if you take preventative measures in good time, then excuse me, then you can get a huge quality of life and a health span, which is far greater than it would have been had you just sort of taken it for granted and waited or delayed, or then the inevitable and tragic diagnosis was faced, and you hadn't taken any preventative or protective measures up until that point. So yes, on both of your fronts, if that makes sense.
I mean, most people will think, and some people perhaps will think, oh dear, if we go to Kate, she's going to tell me what I can't eat. But it's not like that, is it? It's not just, well, sorry, don't eat that anymore. I mean, looking back, when I was younger, okay, I got two bits of nutrition advice when I was about 10, and I think both of them came from my grandmother. One was everything in moderation. And the other one was a little bit of what you fancy does you good. And that was nutrition advice for me as a child. But I think people have got to realize that it's a very complicated discipline.
Yes, and I'm so glad you asked me that question, because I think anybody going to see a nutritionist, they immediately think, oh my gosh, you're just exactly as you said, you're going to tell me what I can't eat any longer, and you're going to tell me to give up all the things that I really enjoy, and et cetera, et cetera. And honestly, for most nutritionists, I mean, there is an element of give and take. However, we tend to put more into the diet. So we emphasize more variety and more of the right types of food for your particular, health issue or health aspiration. And again, as I said earlier, of course there will be compromise. There are certain things that we really could do with taking out altogether, or, minimizing to the most degree possible. But particularly in brain health, I am often recommending, please have more of, your plant rich, not plant only, but plant rich. So get the vegetables in for your fiber and the antioxidants, which are, very anti-inflammatory on the whole body. Try and get the beneficial fats in, the beautiful omega-3 and omega-9 fats in. And these will, I mean, there are certain health discrepancies. Again, if you have gallbladder issues, fat, you have to be very careful with your fat. So definitely go and see a, a professional so they can tailor it to you. But probiotics for your gut health, prebiotics for your gut health, fibrous foods. It tends to be a please eat more of the right things. This will nourish your body, and also it will help with your appetite management. So with the right nutritional program for you, there won't be as much, oh my gosh, I'm really hungry, I've got to reach for that really unhealthy ultra processed snack just because I need something to fill me up quickly. There won't be the energy dips or the blood sugar balance fluctuations with the cravings. So yes, there is that perception, and I'm really pleased you brought it up. But honestly, I can reassure you that from a nutritionist perspective, whilst we take your particular health status into consideration with tailoring our dietary recommendations, often it is, and please eat more of the correct thing for your health type of approach.
Yeah, and is there a difficulty as well in terms of cost of living and finance and all that stuff? There may be a misconception as well about the cost of healthy food, as it were, and the availability and cost of healthy food, as opposed to a lot of the stuff you see on the TV adverts that is pretty unhealthy food, if I can call it that.
Yes, I don't disagree. And it can be a barrier for some people. So things like blueberries, relative to other food items, are more expensive. And in a perfect world, it would be lovely if we could all buy organic. But I understand that there is a price tag on organic. So again, part of my job is to recommend foods within a person's socioeconomic circumstance. So yes, that is a barrier. However, the one I like to use is something like olive oil. So extra virgin olive oil in a dark glass jar, so that it's not sort of leaching out the microplastics from its container. That as a standalone bottle is expensive. It would be a a considerable chunk of a weekly shopping budget, let's say. However, having a tablespoon a day drizzled onto one meal a day, which tends to be more or less the recommended amount, again, depending on your health status, but for generally speaking, a bottle of olive oil will last for weeks. So it is a big cost outlay when you're buying it, but actually it lasts. And with things like blueberries and fresh fruit, a bag of apples or oranges, that can be bought fairly inexpensively. And blueberries, you don't need to eat the entire box of blueberries a day. Just have a palmful and use them as a little snack. I've actually recently started getting my fruit and vegetables from a company that specializes in taking the foods that supermarkets reject, for want of a better word, because they're not perfect enough. And the amount of stuff I get in my weekly delivery of foods that are, 99.9% perfect and beautiful. And I'm really enjoying it. And it is a weekly expense, but it's not, certainly not any more than it would be if I were picking out these individual items if I were to go to a high street supermarket. So if you have a little bit of time, or if you seek nutritionists' guidance on sort of dietary lifestyle factors, if that makes sense, we can offer recommendations and support, according to your, financial circumstances.
Radio, the station that makes you feel good. The station that makes you feel good.
On UK Air Health Radio, we have over 40 weekly shows covering every aspect of health and well-being, available to listen again and download from the website ukhealthradio.com. I'm talking diet on this edition with my guest, Kate Taylor. I mean, you mentioned supermarkets there. It's interesting. I read a post that you put up relatively recently, I think, about brain health-friendly labelling and how that can, you've got to be careful, haven't you, with those kind of things, so you don't mislead people.
Yes, I know exactly what you're referring to. But I mean, I go to supermarkets. I am not against them. I enjoy the experience, actually. They present everything in a very aesthetically pleasing way. And unfortunately, with marketing, having big headlines and really eye-catching packaging, it does attract attention. And if you've got a trending word on there, yes, it can slightly mislead people. It would not be incorrect because that's illegal, but the way that the semantics would be phrased, I would say, can be misleading. When a beautiful avocado is a brain health food, a teaspoon of extra virgin olive oil is a brain food. A little palmful of blueberries is a brain food. Nuts and whole grains and food in its natural state is brain food. So and this is one of the occupational hazards of being a nutritionist. So I'm always a little bit wary of things that come in a packet that have been ultra processed that suddenly say brain food. It's a challenge. But what I would say, I know exactly the post that you're referring to. What I would say is that at least it is even subliminally getting a message out there that, by the way, your food can affect your brain as well. So I was conflicted and I was conflicted and but as a nutritionist, I have to come down on a food first perspective.
Yeah, sure. You know, I think, yeah, as you say, it's important the message gets out, but also as a professional, you've got to look at it from, your point of view. I think one of the other interesting things you alluded to a bit earlier when you talked about olive oil and the containers that the virgin olive oil is in. And one of your blogs on your website, I had a lot of involvement about environmental pollution through my previous career before all this. So I was really interested in your post about brain health and what you called environmental dementogens. Now,
Oh, yes.
that's not a phrase, it's not a word that I'd actually come across. Can you just tell us a little bit about that?
Yes. I think it's a new word, and I think I probably got it actually from listening to some of the healthcare professionals in America talking about them. So a dementogen is considered something in our sort of lifestyle external environment that may be having an almost an invisible impact on our brain. So, I mean, it's an obvious one is something like smoking. You know, everybody understands the link between, you know, the health of our lungs and the cigarettes. But, you know, this is also going to be having an effect on our brain. You know, everything is conjoined. You know, even being around passive smokers, you know, we are still inhaling the smoke. Another thing, you know, exhaust fumes, cars, you know, pollution, mold, and mycotoxins, you know, these things are invisibly, you know, entering our body, and you know, in a cumulative load sense, you know, they're potentially going to be affecting detrimentally our cognitive function and our brain health. Trying to think of the other bits and bobs I put in. Oh, things like the hygiene of your kitchen and your household. You know, something very easy we can do is just take our shoes off when we enter our household, because you don't know the bacteria and the viruses, you know, that are contained on our shoes. So if you just have somewhere separate that you can just pop all of your shoes together, then that's, you know, it's containing it and it's not traveling around the house with you. In terms of our kitchens, there's been a lot of talk recently about, you know, trying to minimize our plastics. So not only in the containers of olive oil, but, you know, the things that we're cooking with, you know, these tiny, tiny little fragments of microplastics. You know, it's fine if you do it once a week in a meal, but, you know, if you're doing it every day, you know, scratching, scuffing, you know, totally inadvertently, you know, but these things are, as I said earlier, the cumulative load. It's just the little factors that may or may not be having an impact, but they're easy to rectify as a protective measure in case they are having an impact and things like that. Oh, candles is another one. So lots of these highly perfumed scents, and candles, you know, we're breathing this in and it's not natural. You know, I mean, unfortunately, some people are allergic to totally natural things, something like pollen. You know, that's where personalized nutrition will come in. But yeah, so dementogens is a fairly recent word to be introduced into the arena, but I quite liked it. That's why I did a post. I was like, oh, that's actually a bit different and a bit interesting. I think I'll write about it.
Yeah, and it was very interesting. I think
Oh,
it's
thank you
another
very much.
example of joining all the dots together, that all these things are connected. Sadly, time is bringing us to a close shortly.
Okay.
Big one to end with. I'm sure there's people listening here that are saying, okay, I'm living with dementia. I'm a carer. Someone living with dementia. Can Kate give me two things that I could do? In respect of brain health, if you choose to, what would they be?
Okay, so is this from a perspective of a carer looking after themselves and trying to protect and prevent dementia, or for the person who has unfortunately received the diagnosis?
Probably both, to be honest. So.
Okay, well, oh, right. The carer absolutely must take time for themselves. You know, try and organize a break and go out and socialize. Go out and do a little bit of movement. It doesn't have to be training for a marathon, it's just movement. And because there's a disproportionate statistic that carers of people with dementia later on themselves develop dementia. So I think looking after yourself as a carer is crucial. Because then you will also be able to give your best to the person you are caring for. You know, it's inflammatory, it's stressful, it's tiring. So look after yourself from a carer's perspective. And from the person who is suffering with dementia, in terms of diet, try as hard as you can to get rid of the ultra processed man-made foods. You know, you don't have to have a very glucose heavy sugary drink. You know, as we age, our body isn't as glucose is our primary fuel, carbohydrates are our primary brain fuel, but actually as we age, it's less efficient and receptive in processing glucose. So there are other nutrients that can support your brain health and your brain function slightly better. I would say come and see a nutritionist for personalized advice. But yeah, get rid of the ultra processed foods as much as you can. Try and eat whole food, keep it natural. And I mean, yeah, as far as you can and have time, you know, try and include all the different multifactorial bits. I know it's hard, and it does seem very overwhelming, but prioritize the bits that are the easiest for you to influence and change in your life. And, you know, just do little steps, you know, small habit changes on a weekly or daily basis. You know, will have quite profound longer term effects. And I understand that somebody with a dementia diagnosis may not have that time, but yeah, whole foods, rich diets. Try and get the natural colors in. If your gallbladder health and your ability to digest fat is appropriate, you know, have that tablespoon of olive oil and get those beautiful beneficial nuts in, beneficial fats. I say nuts because I was going to suggest that, but sometimes people's dentition, it's difficult. But, you know, chia seeds, a tablespoon of little tiny chia seeds. You know, it's a whole food, it's full of omegas, it's full of iron, it's full of magnesium. You know, they can be, you know, hidden in things. Yeah. Whole foods all the way is what I would take away from this.
Well, very wise advice. Kate, it's been fascinating. We'll have to get you back on the show to talk some more in the future. But
Oh, I'd be
for
delighted.
now, thank you so much for being my guest on the D Word.
It's my pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Thanks to Kate, and do take a look at her excellent website, eatdrinkthinknutrition.co.uk. Well, that's all we have time for on this edition. Thanks for your company, and I hope you join me again soon for some more dementia talk right here on the D Word Podcast.